أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Respected Agha Zaidi and Dhakirat, brothers, sisters, it's a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. I first want to congratulate all of you for your efforts in, number one, organizing this program as an opportunity to come together and have, inshallah, some unity in our approach towards this very important mission of propagating the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and in general the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And secondly, I want to also ask Allah to reward all of you for your efforts in this regard. Thank you for inviting me to address you with some words. Today what I'd like to do is to present some perspectives that I have, having lived here now for about 2 years in the community. Some suggestions, advice, tips that inshallah will be, you can consider as you are performing this important mission of being a dhakir or dhakira. So if I can have the next slide, please. First of all, just as a beginning, to give us some inspiration about the value of this service, we have a hadith which is mentioned by Sayyid ibn Ta'us in Al-Luhuf. He says in translation that whoever cries or causes to weep for our sake, meaning the sake of the Ahlul Bayt, 100 people, we guarantee for him from Allah, we guarantee paradise from him from Allah. And whoever cries or causes 50 to weep, his reward is paradise. And whoever cries or causes 30 to weep, his reward is paradise. And whoever cries or causes 10 to weep, his reward is paradise. And whoever cries or causes another to cry, even one person, his reward is paradise. And whoever tries to cry, his reward is paradise. So you can see that from the perspective of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, this mission is so important, it's so valuable, that even if one person is unable to bring tears to their eyes, but for the sake of Allah, they try to cry, that itself has such a great reward. But at the same time, we also see that there is encouragement for this to be something which we take and we give to other people as well too. We try to take the grief and the mourning and spread it to others as well. And that is the mission that somebody who is doing the dhikr of the musibat of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is undertaking. Okay, next slide please. Now, my first comment is that, you know, for every task that we want to undertake, there are certain prerequisites. There are certain conditions. Not everything is meant for everyone. Okay? Like for example, when something is broken in my home, you know, I don't have the skills of being a handyman, right? So I might try tinkering a little bit here and there, but when it gets a little bit complicated, I call up my friends and I say that you come and help me out because I can't do it, okay? Now, there's a hadith that's reported in Sunni sources that I'm going to mention here. The idea, even if the hadith is not authentic, the idea is something which is an accepted idea, the idea of being qualified for doing a task. According to this hadith, Abu Dharr, rahmatullahi alayhi, the great companion of our Prophet, one day he went to the Prophet and he said that, "I want to take on this post, this responsibility. I want to be in this position of being able to serve the Ummah." Maybe it was some sort of post in the Islamic government of our Prophet. According to this hadith, the Prophet, who was his teacher, he was his guide, he told him that, "O Abu Dharr, anta da'if, you are weak. And this position you seek is an amana." It's a trust, right? It's an amana. Somebody who is going to be in a position in Islamic government, well, it's an amana from God. It's a divine trust. On the Day of Judgment, it will be a source of khizy, like humiliation and regret, except for one who takes it on properly. Okay, who takes it on with haqq, with the right approach, with the right prerequisites, and performs the necessary responsibilities. That's the type of person who should take this on. Now, maybe Rasulullah wished to then work with Abu Dharr to train him so that eventually he could take on that position. He wasn't telling him that, no, you're never going to get there. But he was telling him that, no, where you are right now, you need to work on it as well too. Now, this is something that's very important for all of us who are blessed with the opportunity to try to take on some work for the sake of Allah. Whatever it may be, whether we are, you know, for example, being a dhakira or a dhakir, or whether we're a teacher, or whether we are a speaker, whatever it is, right? We have to realize that whatever position there are some prerequisites. Now, I don't have time, nor the ability to be able to talk about all of the prerequisites for being a dhakir of the Ahlul Bayt. But I want to mention some aspects of this. Where do we want to be in order to do it correctly and properly? So can I have the next slide, please? The first one is about when we speak about matters, okay? One of the things that we sometimes hear from people in the community is that, alhamdulillah, you know, our ladies, mashallah, they're very active, and sometimes we hear the very good things about the things that they say. And this makes us proud that you are saying things. Sometimes we hear that, for example, you will quote lectures of people like Al-Ghazaydi or others, right? And it's very good that we hear these type of things, right? But sometimes we hear some things which are troubling, that these types of things are being spoken about, and there are issues where basically the points that are given are incorrect. Okay, so this is a reminder for all of us that when it comes to speaking about things, we should be sure of what we're talking about. There's no room for guessing about what's right and what's wrong. If we're not sure, we have to keep silent about it. Okay, this is something which makes sense logically. It's something we find in the Quran, in the Ahadith. One example is that there was a companion in Al-Kafi, this hadith is there. A companion goes to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says that sometimes issues come up, and when I look at the book of Allah and the Sunnah, I can't find an answer. Okay, now back in those days, right, they couldn't just call up the Imam, right? They couldn't just send him an email or something, right? Maybe they lived in a different city far away. So what does he do? He says that when I don't know, then I guess. I give my own opinion. The Imam alayhi salam tells him that no, even if you arrive at the truth, you will not be rewarded. And if you make a mistake, then you have forged a lie against Allah. This is a very serious thing. This companion wasn't trying to do something wrong. He's trying to do something right. But he says that sometimes, I don't know. Imam alayhi salam says no. Even if you get the right point, there's no thawab for that. And you might be wrong about it as well too. Better that you keep silent. Okay, from Minhaj al-Salihin, this is a book of fiqh. Many of the fuqaha have commented on this book. There's a hukum which says that among the greatest of sins is to give an opinion without certainty or proof. Okay, so this is a very, very simple point that we have to make sure that whatever we say, it's something that we can defend. We know that it's something which is correct. Okay, next slide, please. Now, what are some sources that we can consult for masaib? Maulana was talking about the important, from what I understood at least, the importance of making sure that we speak about those things which took place and avoiding the inhirafat, avoiding the tahrifat, right? So what are some sources that we can consult? Okay, the first source I'd like to suggest is that you can look at those qualified ulama who are aware of these matters, and you can take from their lectures. Okay, what is it that they have said? Now, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the Urdu speakers, but when it comes to the Persian speakers, maybe some of these books have been translated into Urdu. Some of them that I'd like to suggest are the following. I know that some of them have been translated to Urdu. One of them is the books of Shaheed Mutahhari. Shaheed Mutahhari, in many places, he has actually done Zikr-e Musibat. He actually mentions what took place. And these have been compiled into a book now in the Persian. It's called, I believe it's called Rozay-e Mutahhar. It's a very good book because it's, you know, everything he says there, he has a reference for it. Okay. Another one is Rahbar Inqilab, Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Whenever he speaks about something, it's something which is base, has a base to it, it has references. You can find it even online. They have YouTube clips where they have his different musibat, and you can look at the subtitles as well there. Ayatollah Jawadi Amali, Hafidhahullah, same thing. Another scholar, Sayyid Fatimi Niya. Another scholar is Dr. Nasir Rafi'i. For this last one, I know that some of his books have been translated to Urdu as well. He has a very good approach towards doing this. Next slide, please. In terms of books, some of the suggestions that that I've gotten from some of the experts among my teachers. The first one being Al-Luhuf of Sayyid Ibn Tawus. This is available in English. I'm sure it's available in Urdu as well. Muntaha Al-Amal of Sheikh Abbas Qummi. This book was something that he wrote in the latter part of his life, you know, and something which reflects, you know, his experience as being a scholar. It has a good section there about what took place in Karbala in particular, and also about the other Ma'asumin alayhim salam. Maqtal of Al-Muqarram by Abdul Razak Al-Muqarram. This is also available in English as well. I'm sure it's available in Urdu. Nafasul Mahmum of Sheikh Abbas Qummi was a book that was written before Muntaha Al-Amal. It's also a very good resource, but in some places where there's a difference between the two, between Muntaha Al-Amal and Nafasul Mahmum, Muntaha Al-Amal is superior. Finally, The Story of Karbala by Ayatollah Munfarid. It's available in English, and I'm sure it's also available in other languages as well. The other one I would mention is for those of you who do speak Arabic or Farsi, there's a new book. It's called As-Sahih Fi Maqtali Sayyid al-Shuhada by Ayatollah Muhammad Ray Shahri. And I know that it's available in Arabic and in Persian. As-Sahih Fi Maqtali Sayyid al-Shuhada. Now, in terms of topics, now, of course, as part of the majalis that are given, usually it's a custom to, other than mentioning what took place, other than mentioning the core messages of, you know, the love of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, the importance of following the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, what are some other topics that we could suggest, you know, the things that could be addressed? Just some humble suggestions. Number one is practical ahkam. You know, we want to have programs where we come out and have taken some practical points from them. One of the most practical things we can take is ahkam, rules, okay? Now, in this regard, I've noticed, you know, for example, one of the issues I feel that is not talked about enough is the importance of salatul jama'ah among women. Of course, alhamdulillah, in Toronto, we do have, you know, ladies who know about this, but it's something that we can work on. Sometimes we go to gatherings and, you know, many of the ladies, they could participate. There's nothing that's preventing them, but they don't. They just go and they do their furada salah. So this is one of the areas of ahkam. But even things like the importance of learning the correct qira'ah of the Surah Al-Fatiha and, you know, the surahs, for example. The importance of being able to do a wudu correctly. These are things that, you know, when we've spent time with the men in this community, we find that sometimes even men who we would expect would know some of these things, they don't know them. They don't know how to perform a correct wudu, for example. So these are very important things. These are fundamentals. You know, we can talk about things advanced, but some of these basic things we need to give reminders as well. The role of individuals in a Muslim family. This is a very important topic that we be able to address. We be able to talk about the role of the family members. In particular, the role of a mother in Islam, the role of a wife in Islam. You know, what the Western society is portraying for what a mother and a wife should do, in many cases, it's opposite from what we believe in. Right? So our role is to, we need to present that this is the way a Muslim wife is supposed to be. This is the way a Muslim daughter is supposed to be. This is the way a Muslim mother is supposed to be. You know, the ideas of supporting the husband, the ideas of, sacrifice, the ideas of showing love and compassion, the ideas of patience, right, of husnul khulq. These are things that need to be emphasized again and again, of controlling anger, of the idea of recognizing the leader of the family, the idea of supporting the leader of the family. These are concepts that need to be explained. The importance of active parenting. We find that many times parents, they just say, you know what, we've given up. Our kids make the decisions, right? They decide how much TV they're going to watch. They decide how much computer games they're going to play, right? We need to take control of that. After all, we're parents. Our parents need to be responsible for these sort of things. The importance of effort and hard work and not being lazy, for the youth especially. The negative effects of media and social media. Having confidence and self-respect versus being obsessed with what other people think about you. This is a huge problem that we have. Next slide, please. The negative effects of living in non-Muslim society. Having modesty and chastity. The importance of marriage and seeking a spouse. Conducting the wedding and living a married life according to Islamic teachings. In all these three areas, how you find a spouse, how you conduct the wedding, and how you live your life, all of this has to be according to Islamic teachings. The importance of a structured Islamic education. You know, it's very important that we have a culture of taking classes, right? You know, that women, for example, should be able to study basic aqaid, basic ahkam. Men should be able to study aqaid, ahkam, akhlaq, the akhlaq of family, akhlaq when it comes to the state of our heart. These are things that we need to encourage in our community. And the idea of leading a simple life. These are just some suggestions. Next slide, please. Now, another suggestion I have is that for those dhakirs or dhakirat who are not qualified ulama, my suggestion is that instead of making your own speeches, just quote from speeches of qualified ulama, or use the transcripts of their speeches instead of bearing the responsibility yourselves. Okay, this is, at the end of the day, it's a responsibility that we have. So why not give that responsibility to somebody else? You know, you say that I'm quoting this from this person. Now you might think that, okay, if other people hear me quoting somebody else, they might say that, oh, why didn't they come up with their own thing? No, believe me, first of all, many times people don't listen to other people's lectures. Second of all, even if they listen to them, it's not bad to hear it a second time. Thirdly, they will appreciate the fact that you are somebody who takes the care to reference those things. Not that you're just saying it from your own thoughts and your own ideas and putting an Islamic spin on it. Okay, next slide, please. Now, I just wanted to mention a couple of points because I know I don't have that much time, but very quickly, these are some things that I've noticed, some misconceptions that I've heard. I want to make sure that they get clarified. One of them is the role of istikhara. Is istikhara just a matter of like a glass crystal ball that we look to whenever we want to know the future? Okay, next slide, please. Istikhara literally means to seek goodness or to want the best from Allah. Okay, literally. Istikhara is a form of dua when we're asking Allah for something. It is not a way to know what is hidden. Okay, istikhara isn't revealed the future to us. All right? It is not a shortcut or substitute for thinking, consulting with family and friends, and trusted individuals. Okay, those things, if we have a problem that we can't solve, we don't know what decision to make, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to think about it, use our aql. We're supposed to consult with family, friends, and trusted individuals. The result of an istikhara are not wajib to follow either. Okay, now, next slide. This is from Ayatollah Sistani, Hafidhahullah, from the website, I've translated it. This is what he said. It is permissible to depend on the istikhara from the Quran, but when after... One more salawat, please. After being unable to find an answer by thought, referring to experts and consulting with family and friends. If after doing that there is still confusion and there is no option that is better than the others, then the istikhara will indicate one option over the others. First, we have to try and find out an answer. We have to consult. And then if there's one which is better than the other, we go with that and do tawakkul on Allah. Only if we're confused, we don't know if it's this one or this one, that's when we do istikhara. Okay, next slide, please. It is fitting for the father not to do istikhara in the matter of his daughter if proposals have come from those who are her match according to the Sharia and the Urf, unless the daughter agrees to it herself. Because istikhara is only done for a matter that one can choose for himself according to the Sharia, whereas the wilaya of a father over his daughter becomes inactive when he refuses to agree to her marrying a match. Like, so this is what the Maraji are saying, right? We need to make sure that we also have this right understanding and then we convey this to the other people as well too. The last one point I'll make, inshallah, is if you go to the next slide. It's about this one again. We've heard that sometimes it seems that there's incorrect information being given. If there's a lady who's going for Hajj, okay, and she knows that she will have Hayd during that time, what is her responsibility? Some people are being given the advice that they should definitely take the pill, because otherwise they'll be somehow missing out on some of the portions of the Hajj and the Umrah. This is not correct. Okay, it is not required to take the pill. I myself would never recommend to somebody to do that because I know, I'm not a medical expert, but I know that there's some research that indicates that it can be very harmful for some people to do so. I would leave that to the doctors, and I would advise somebody that they can consult with the doctor. It's permissible to do that, but it's not required. And if a lady has Hayd, the ulama have given us details as to what can happen, how they can still go for Hajj, and they won't miss out on anything. Everything they can do fine, no problem. Worst comes to worst, they can have a na'ib do the some of the portions of the tawaf, for example, and the salah for them. And they will not lose out in the thawab even a bit. Okay. So with that, I'd like to end. I hope that inshallah you take these suggestions in the right spirit. After all, we're working as part of the same cause. And inshallah, sometimes we have to give reminders and suggestions as well too, and to learn from one another. May Allah accept all your efforts. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.